from the Civic Media Radio Network, moving Wisconsin forward one joke at a time. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes. But where it's going, no one knows. Hello, Wisconsin!
Now, filling in for the new mom, here's Jane Matinere.
Good morning and welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. Shout out to Oshkosh if you're listening on WISS. Or on WLAK, Lake Eyre in Amory.
Amory.
My favorite
Amory.
Place I've never been yet. And you can always join us. Greg's on the board at 844-967-2789, 844-96.
Party.
Or if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, you can leave a comment there as well. Coming up at 11:30, Dr. Jill Underle is going to be joining us. She is the State Superintendent of Public Education, and we're going to be talking about some of the many challenges facing our schools and our students and our teachers, everything from not having enough staff to making sure that our kids are protected. All of that is coming up at 11:33. Wanted to start, though, with an article, and I tried to get Piet Levy from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Wonderful guy, very talented writer, and knows all things entertainment. So he has an article in the Journal Sentinel about the top grossing concerts and how American Family Field did when compared to all of these other venues.
Yeah.
So Milwaukee did miss out on, like, arguably the two biggest concerts were Taylor Swift and Beyonce.
They'll never come here.
Well, Chicago's right there, right?
I know.
don't take it so personally, Greg Bach.
This is, honestly, this kind of brings up a little bit of, if you are a concert goer and you enjoy seeing bands that can be in larger, like your arenas or your stadiums, it's rare that the big names come here. They go to the big cities, and I understand that, but there's a certain level of, like, oh man, we're not good enough.
I just think we're not large enough.
If Beyonce came to Milwaukee, the Midwest would come to Milwaukee.
Oh,
if Taylor Swift decided to come to, and absolutely, she'd probably have to do two nights or three nights AmFam, because I don't know the capacity from many of the places she played, but if she came here, people would travel from all over the world to see her.
Absolutely.
And I think that's just the thing. Give us a chance.
Let us prove we can handle it.
What nice.
According to Pollstar's year-end report, AmFam Field was number 35 on the list of the 100 top grossing stadiums in the world for concerts in 2023. In the U.S., AmFam, the 19th highest grossing stadium. Its peers, primarily football stadiums that have bigger seating capacities. So AmFam sold over 178,000 tickets for concerts, and that pulled in $35.4 million.
So how many tickets?
178,107.
Interesting. Because I know George Strait was there, and that would be, I think that sold out. That'd be 40 plus thousand tickets. That means that we just don't also have a lot of concerts there either. Because if you break down the numbers, that's 40 to, that's like five or six concerts a year there. Yeah.
I mean, it's way up from 2022, according to this article again from Piet Levy in the Journal Sentinel. I reached out to him, and he's unfortunately unavailable. I think he's going to be off for the holidays. The AmFam ranked 78th in 2022.
Yeah.
So this is a big jump up.
And I know with this, all the stadium stuff, they really want to push more concerts. They want to winterize the place. Yes. So it can be used year round, which I think is fantastic. Yep. I personally think the entertainment tax, whatever that tax is, they're only going to do for non-baseball games, should be for everything, because it'll help. But it seems like this is the way AmFam's going to go. I know they got a couple of, my friends are going to go see Green Day and Smashing Pumpkins there next year.
Oh, wow.
At the stadium, at a baseball stadium. That's amazing. These bands used to play like basements.
Everybody's got to start somewhere, Greg.
I know.
Are you familiar with Morgan Wallen?
Yes. Yep.
What genre of music does he play?
He's country music. He's kind of got an interesting sound because it sounds almost like hip hop because his drums are generally like drum machines. And he is very popular. I believe he played two nights.
He did. Yeah. In April, he had two shows at AmFam. He was number three on Polestar's top grossing North American tour charts.
Yeah.
I will really regret missing out on Pink. She had the fifth highest grossing North American tour. She was at AmFam in August, the first woman headliner with a tour stop in a Wisconsin stadium.
That's what I love about her. And she did, if you all have the time, I might even link it in the show notes. She did a great interview on 60 Minutes. And she talked about the fact she wasn't trying to throw shade on Beyonce or Taylor Swift, but the fact that she sold like 3 million tickets and no one talked about it.
Yeah.
Because when you're on tour at the same time as the other two artists, I mean, that's Taylor and Beyonce, but Pink is amazing.
She is. And she, you're right, though. She really did kind of get glossed over in the midst of all of that. And I would really encourage you to watch that 60 Minutes interview. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
She's a gymnast. And that just explains, I had no idea that she had done gymnastics as a child.
Yep.
And this has just morphed into, she puts on her own Cirque du Soleil show.
Yes. Yeah. And she's getting her own Vegas residency, which will be perfect.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be amazing. Absolutely. And George Strait. Yep. George Strait, number 8 on the list. He played just one of his 14 shows of the year at AmFam Field in June.
He comes. He likes Milwaukee. He likes us. And here's how big George Strait is. I've told people this. He could do 3 nights at the baseball field. He could play 20 songs a night. He'd never repeat it. They'd all be number one hits on the country charts. And his openers are people who play Pfizer Forum. That's how big he is. I love George Strait.
I cannot say I am familiar. I'm not a... Country music was never my jam.
Yeah, of course.
I'll take your word for it.
He is honestly, he's the real deal. He just sings good country songs. He's a country guy. He's a cowboy. He's a real life cowboy. And he's just cool. I just like him.
AmFam Field is going to be hosting at least 4 shows next year. Kenny Chesney, Green Day, and Luke Combs, who already has 2 dates booked.
Yeah. Yeah. Country acts come through there, and they usually do
pretty well.
They do really, really well.
Other venues that made the year-end charts for Polestar, Live Nation-backed Madison promoter FPC Live, number 24, racking in $108.4 million, $1.5 million tickets sold. The Sylvie in Madison, number 13, the top grossing clubs in the world.
Whoa.
Made $6 million.
Sheesh.
And the Majestic Theater in Madison came in at 122, down from number 98 last year, but still with a gross of almost $800,000. So,
fun fact about the Majestic, I've performed there.
You have?
I have.
Is it one of those wonderful old theaters?
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. You can feel the age. You can feel, like, the history in it. It's just a great place.
As far as Pfizer Forum in Milwaukee goes, number 81, made $24.7 million. Over 209,000 tickets. The Bucks Arena had 2 of the top 10 grossing tours of the year with Drake and Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
In 2022, Pfizer was 79th, but made less, $14.7 million. This year, the second busiest for concerts at Pfizer since it opened in 2018, with 21, not including comedy shows and other touring events.
I mean, it's...
People are just happy to get back out, I think.
And also, Milwaukee is really showing itself as a place for live entertainment for these big acts. I mean, the fact, like you said, George Strait, you said it was one of 14 shows he did at all this year.
He chose
Milwaukee. Pink chose Milwaukee. It's a good spot to be.
I find it interesting, though, why wouldn't George Strait, someone of that, if he's got that big of a following and that many hits, why wouldn't he go somewhere like Chicago?
You'd have to ask George if I had to hazard a guess. I'd probably say the fact that he has such a relationship with this city as well. He's been coming here for a long time. It's kind of centralized, you know. Maybe it's a little. I mean, I don't know the tickets. I couldn't afford the tickets. They were like, I looked at the cheapest tickets and they were $500.
What?
Yeah, he's a draw, and I'm sure I could have found cheaper tickets, but I also couldn't find anyone who wanted to go with me, and I didn't want to go to see George Strait by myself.
But that's a country song in and of itself.
Yeah. Fair.
I had to go to the show alone.
Because no one else liked George.
I took my dog in my truck. And there, you got a number one.
Okay.
You got a number one hit right there.
I took my puppers and my hybrid.
There you go. All right. We're going to switch gears just a little bit. And just a reminder, Dr. Jill Underley will be joining us coming up at 11:33 to talk about public education in Wisconsin and some of the challenges facing our teachers and our students. Congratulations to Quick Trip. And I know you are a Quick Tripper.
You know how the Spotify does those raps at the end of the year where they say, like, here's what you listen to all year long. Here's the songs popular. Quick Trip does the same thing, but it makes you feel like, oh, man, I should eat a little better. I love their food. Don't get me wrong. Quick Trip, sponsor me. But when I get that rap, I'm like, I need to start exercising. But congratulations to the KT.
Yep, they are planning a $151 million business expansion, which is expected to create over 500 jobs by 2027.
Wow. And what does that include?
This includes expanding its dairy, its bakery, operations in La Crosse. They're going to renovate an office building in Onalaska. They're going to construct a new distribution center. More than 80% of the products sold in Quick Trip stores are supplied by the company's La Crosse-based food production and distribution operations. So that's where your sandwiches are coming from.
La Crosse, all right.
You want to focus on La Crosse.
The breakfast sandwiches are so good.
Just a sausage and cheese biscuit?
Yeah, it's on a croissant. I like the croissant. Or the ham and cheese on the croissant. They're very tasty.
Well done, Quick Trip. You have a fan right here.
Sponsor me.
Sponsor the show. That would be great.
Or just me.
You can do that, too. If you ever want to chime in, you can join us at 844-967-2789 or leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. We'll be right back. Stay close. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio. Everything that I got is just what I've got on. When that sun is high in that Texas sky, I'll be bucking at the county fair. Amarillo by morning, Amarillo, I'll be there. They took my saddle in Houston, broke my leg in Santa Fe. Lost my wife and a girlfriend somewhere along the way.
Yeah. All right. Here we go again.
Good morning. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. So happy to have you along. Jane Matinier. In for Kristen Bry, Greg Bach is on the board. You can always join us at 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. Coming up in just a little bit, about 11:33, Dr. Jill Underley, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, is going to be joining us. Very excited to have the chance to talk to her, and we will talk about what DPI is doing for our kids and our teachers. That's all on the way at 11:33. Wanted to give a shout out to an organization here in Waukesha because, of course, our studio located in beautiful downtown Waukesha. The Humane Animal Welfare Society, otherwise known as HAWS, is a wonderful, wonderful animal shelter separate from the Wisconsin Humane Society. But HAWS in Waukesha has been around for a very, very long time. So they welcomed 20 new dogs yesterday. The arrival of a 1.5-year-old mixed breed named Frisco marks the 12,000th pet transported by a nonprofit called Greater Good Charities, which helps find homes for dogs.
That's awesome.
Isn't that cool?
Love it.
Every time the plane lands, according to Jennifer Smiha from HAWS, every time the plane lands, every time they open those doors, we hear the barks, we see the animals look through their crates at us. It's an overwhelming sense of, we got this. Frisco is one of 60 dogs flown into Wisconsin from Louisiana and Alabama, and they will be taken to four different shelters including Hawes here in southeastern Wisconsin. This Greater Good Charities began this animal transport program in April of 2021, and they help pets out of shelters that are overcrowded or sometimes tragically dealing with natural disasters.
Oh my God, that's so, like,
but just think
about
it.
That's so sad, but that's such amazing work.
It really is. But I mean, when you think about, look at the fires in Hawaii, which were not that long ago.
No, not even 6 months, I think.
And we just had terrible weather down south. Again, there was a tornado. And
actually, the 6 months, I was thinking those were the Canadian wildfires.
Oh no, the Hawaiian wildfires. Yeah. I think people forget about that. So if you have an opportunity, maybe it's something you're thinking about for the holidays, 20 new dogs at Hawes.
Oh my God. And I'm watching the video that you put into our planner for the show today. And no dog does the worst. You're cuddly.
They're adorable. If you are going to, and I have mixed feelings about this because I've talked with the Humane Society and other humane animal welfare officials a lot over the years on whether or not it's a good idea to adopt a pet for the holidays.
Yeah.
You just want to make sure that everybody's on board with it. And I would certainly suggest that you don't give a pet as a surprise.
Nope.
Right? You want to make sure that the receiver is actually on board for all the responsibility that it's going to take.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when we started talking about getting a dog in January of this year, we talked here and there like, oh, it's good. We should get a dog if we can, blah, blah. And then in January, when we went to New Orleans, we actually sat down in a restaurant. We were talking and we decided to open the conversation to actually doing this. And we didn't get a dog until less than a month ago. So right? We really, really thought about it, did research and made sure. Yeah. So giving a puppy or any animal, especially bunnies, they say bunnies are a terrible present because kids get them and they lose interest in them. But we're talking about dogs. Yeah, absolutely right. Do the research. Make sure you're all on board. And even if you know you're getting it, you're still going to be so shocked, surprised, excited when you open that box up. And
oh, look, he's getting all squishy. Yeah. How is Maybelle?
Perfect.
Maybelle, the perfect dog.
She had a little accident on the couch yesterday. But I mean, I got to say, she's very well trained to go on the pee pads. So I would say 99% of the time she's going on pee pads and doing her business and loving on us. And
she's warming up.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. We're trying to get her to understand how to jump off of a couch. She can leap like an Olympic champion onto the couch, but that jumping down, she just looks at it like, what's going on here?
So what do you do? Do you pick her up and put her down?
We pick her up. We put her down, but Bridget's like, we should get her a stair step. I'm like, no. She should learn. She's right there. If you could see her, most of her body is weighted towards the end of the couch. You can see she wants to. I'm like, we're literally days from this happening, and I don't want to spend $50 on a step.
If she can jump up on the couch, she can jump off.
She's having some, she's. I completely agree with you, but if you see her, she gets nervous. So, but I also have tried to push her little tush off and like, there you go. But no, she's doing great. She's opening up. She's warming up. She's 4 months now, and she just gives all the love and the kisses and the licks and
that's
cuddles
great.
And starting to lose her teeth, which I did not know dogs did.
Oh yeah, they have puppy teeth.
Yeah, Bridget's like, what is this? I'm like, this is a tooth. This sucks.
Did you put it under her dog bed so the tooth fairy could?
Tooth fairy came and gave her some kibble.
You're going to be the most indulgent pet parent on the planet.
No,
yes,
I didn't, for one thing, no, we didn't do that. We're not going to do that. And second, I told you this for Christmas. I said, we're not getting her anything for Christmas because everyone else will. We already bought her a ton of stuff.
I was going to say, does she really need any more stuff? Probably not.
No.
No, absolutely. Just like kids.
Yeah.
Let grandma and grandpa get all the presents. It'll all be good.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. When we come back, Dr. Jill Underlie, she is the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, is going to be joining us. All kinds of things going on in our education system and all kinds of challenges that our teachers and our students are facing. We are going to address some of those things and find out what the DPI is doing and what they're looking at for the year as we move ahead. And just one more reminder, Hawes again, Humane Animal Welfare Society here in Waukesha. Welcome 20 new dogs yesterday. Frisco is the 12,000th pet that was transported by Greater Good Charity. So if you're considering maybe adopting a pet for the holidays, you want to check out Haws and give them a call. Go to their website as well, and you can probably fill out a form a little bit ahead of time in order to speed up the whole process. So I just got a little note. Dr. Underley has a dog. We're going to be talking to Dr. Underley not only about DPI and teachers and students, but
dogs!
We're going to talk about her dog as well. That's on the way. Stay close. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin across the Civic Media Radio Network. Wisconsin. I'm Jane Manmayer, in for Creston Bride. Greg Bach is on the board. You can always join us. Call or text at 844-967-2789. Very excited to be joined by our guest this half hour. She is the state superintendent of public instruction, Dr. Jill Underley. Good morning. Thank you for joining the show. I think you have your... There we go.
Sorry if I sound a little hoarse. I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, and I might cough, but I'll put myself on mute if that happens. So.
Doctor, you're in good company, Dr. Underley. There's all kinds of plagues, little mini plagues going around right now. So there are many people who I think are battling the same thing as you. Speaking of battling, let's talk about school.
Yeah. And well,
the many,
sorry, I'll
many,
let you go.
It's just the many challenges that our educators are facing in Wisconsin. Where would you like to start?
Absolutely. And I'm sorry, there are a lot of things in my mind when it comes to current challenges facing our schools and libraries. So I'm glad, first of all, that you've had me on the show, because I'd love to talk about it. And just the opportunity to talk about it is really wonderful. So thanks again for that. So I'm glad you asked the question about the challenges facing our schools and libraries. There's a lot of reasons for them, lots of reasons for these challenges. Right now, I mean, we're out in our communities talking to people. It's part of our strategic planning process, and we're hearing about it, right? We're hearing directly from Wisconsin school and library staff. We're hearing directly from families, parents, even students about what those challenges are. What we're hearing is certainly the shortages and wanting great teachers in their classrooms. We're hearing about achievement challenges. Certainly there's lots of room to grow there. And, you know, especially when it comes to funding, particularly special education. We're hearing about transportation challenges. I mean, we're reading about transportation challenges. We also hear about the worries. Particularly about the ugly partisan and extremist rhetoric, because those voices are loud, right? And even though they're a small minority of people, they're very loud voices, and it's been a distraction from our real work. And we're also hearing about what we're seeing when it comes to bills in the legislature. People are concerned and they're scared. You know, they're upset and angry about the attacks on trans kids. They're upset about the attacks on our libraries and our librarians. And those are distractions, and they really are hurtful ones at that. And they distract us from the real work that we need to be doing. So those, you know, those are just a few of the challenges that our schools and libraries are facing.
Dr. Underley, and I think what's at least in to my estimation, and I find this especially disturbing, is some of these, you know, efforts to ban books and all of these things are not necessarily happening organically.
Right.
And are not necessarily Wisconsin-based. These are outside groups coming in to agitate for these things and then make targets of our librarians, which just... Yeah. It breaks my heart. It breaks my heart the way that I have seen teachers and librarians demonized to the extent that they have been. That's just wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really pathetic. I mean, it's really low when you think about who, you know, is being targeted. I mean, you think about these extremist groups are targeting kids. They're targeting teachers and librarians. I mean, it's just so ugly and it's pathetic. And it's so anti-American when you think about it too, right? Because, you know, freedom of information, freedom of thought, being able to go into a library and read a newspaper that you, or a magazine or a book that, you know, that's what we're built on in a democracy, is that ability to acquire that information and that knowledge. And we have people who are professionals in that acquisition and the transfer of knowledge. And so then to attack them and to demonize them is really an attack on our democracy and the values that we hold dear. And so it is, it's just pathetic and ugly, and I'm tired of it because it takes away from all of the work that we really should be focusing on.
Well, absolutely. I can't imagine some of the rhetoric that teachers must be hearing and personal attacks. And again, librarians, who I have always thought of as extraordinarily knowledgeable, nothing other than helpful, and trying to turn them into, I don't know, it's just astonishing to me that this is where we are. If you're just joining us, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underley, is here, and we're talking about the challenges facing our schools and our students. What about staffing, Dr. Underley? When we have to look for educators who can deal with all of the things that are going on, it's got to be especially difficult to attract new blood or even to keep longstanding teachers in the profession.
Yeah, I mean, it's all related when you think about it. Certainly, people, why they're leaving the teaching profession or why they're not going into the teaching profession, or even school principals or administrators when they're resigning in the middle of the school year, it always comes back to how they're treated, right? They don't want to deal with the politics. They just want to do their jobs. And they go into these professions because they care about kids. They love their communities. And they want to make the world a better place. And you think about the larger attack on public education. I mean, like you said earlier, it's a national thing. It's not organic coming out of, you know, the local level of school parents or community members. This is like a part of a bigger, bigger orchestrated agenda. It's really, in a way, you know, looking at how can we undermine public education further. Making sure that we don't have people who want to become teachers is a very good way to do that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Making sure you don't have people who know the content, right? So what you're going to find out then is you're going to have, or how do they work with kids? You're going to find that, you know, it's going to, long term, our schools are going to suffer, and we're suffering in the short term. And it's not that we don't have people who want to become teachers. We're finding that once they become teachers, they don't stay in teaching. And that's a big deal. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. Politics and the culture wars are, you know, in the top three. Salary and benefits are, you know, certainly in the top three, but certainly how they're treated is a big part of that too. And the disrespect that we've been showing them over the past 13 years, especially.
What can we do? What can we do for our teachers?
Yeah. So, I mean, certainly the big thing I think community members can do and parents can do is just show our respect for teachers. I mean, teachers are, they're incredible people. They want what's best for your kid. And so they're certainly reaching out to parents frequently, keeping those lines of communication open, engaging parents, because it is a partnership when your kids are in school. Yes, you are the parent and you will always be the child's parent, but they spend a great portion of their day with other adults. And those adults want to know what's best for your kid by talking to you about it. They want to know more, you know, how your child learns, or, you know, what their strengths are, so they can build on those. So certainly showing those, showing that communication, the respect, you know, they're hearing so much negative. So having that support is important. At DPI, we're doing several things. We're continually reevaluating what we hear from the field to help our teacher preparation programs and our school districts get what they need to put high quality teachers in front of kids. We're also taking action on this. At DPI, we're working with licensing, such as like special education induction programs, which is like a network of new teachers in the special education. So it's like they have this cohort and this mentorship and network where they can work with each other. We're looking at teacher apprenticeship programs. That's more of a national thing that's coming through the Department of Workforce Development here in Wisconsin, but we're partnering with them to make it more like a traditional apprenticeship model. And we're also really working on our career pathways. You know, high school kids, when you talk to them, a lot of them still want to become teachers.
Do
and
they?
We need to reinforce that. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the big thing that I think we need to focus on, because when I was in high school and I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, I had probably a dozen teachers tell me, you should become a teacher. And we're not hearing that anymore. You know, we have more people, and it's parents included, who are teachers, are telling their kids, don't become a teacher. And so these kids, you know, they're exposed to it. They're interested in it, and they want to do it, but they're having people talk them out of it. And when you think about the atmosphere and the climate, yeah, I can see why, but we can't do that. We have to work to make it better. And we have to work to make sure that we're keeping good kids interested in becoming teachers. And so that's why we're certainly reinforcing career pathways and programs to do that. So there's a lot. I mean, we've put stipends for student teachers in our budget requests for the 23-25 budget. And that got knocked out, you know, by the legislature. But we're going to try again. I mean, we're really trying. We really know that having high quality teaching professionals in front of our kids, including teacher aides and assistants and paras, we need that if we're going to have good schools in Wisconsin.
Well, and Dr. Underlie, I mean, good heavens, when I think of if we lose all of our public schools, private schools have much different measurements and they don't have to take everyone, is my understanding correct?
Right. Absolutely. I guess the way that I kind of look at this, if, you know, yeah, certainly when I'm trying to explain it to just a person on the street who's like, well, what's the difference? I think about it this way. It's like, think about golf courses, right? Or parks, right? You've got public golf courses and you have private golf courses or country clubs, right? You know, so that's kind of the same thing when it comes to schools. You have to pay a membership or tuition to go to the private, like you would a country club or whatever. They don't have to accept you. You have to follow like certain rules, which could be discriminatory. And if you don't, they can kick you out. They will, you know, there's nothing that says, you know, like once they accept the kid that like if the child has disabilities, well, you know what, we can't serve you. They're not held to the same standards that public schools are. And at the very root of it all, public schools are for everyone. And when you think about our democracy and as a cornerstone of that democracy, public education is critical. If we are going to have an informed, engaged electorate, we need public schools because we need to ensure that every kid is getting the best possible education. They shouldn't have to pay for it. And in order to do that, that's how your democracy survives and not only survives, but thrives.
Well, and I'm particularly concerned about our rural areas, Dr. Underlie, which are already challenged. You know, they have their own challenges in rural areas, and in many instances, several communities are sharing one school or one school system, and there aren't private options available all over the state of Wisconsin. There just aren't.
Right. And the other thing is, I mean, when you bring up the rural, I mean, certainly the challenges are, you know, just incredible there in rural areas, too, when you think about the teacher shortage. You know, like in a rural area, you might have one school. It might have, like, let's say one high school, middle school, or one elementary school might only have 200 kids in one building. The districts, we have a lot of districts in Wisconsin that are under 1,000 kids in the district. I mean, they're small, and we're already losing people we know in rural areas because of housing shortages. I mean, our birth rate in Wisconsin is low, and, you know, our rural areas are aging. So, I mean, there comes a certain time in people's lives, you just can't have any more kids.
Right.
And so our schools are seeing declining enrollment, and it's in rural areas. It's not because they're choosing to opt to private schools. It's because they're just aren't enough kids. So they're sharing teachers, or you have one teacher who's teaching maybe advanced math, physics and chemistry. And, you know, maybe you find that unicorn to teach that class in high school. And then after a year or two, they're like, you know what, this is really awful. I could go to a larger school, like in the suburbs or in an urban area, and maybe just teach physics all day.
Yeah.
I don't have to, you know, do all this other stuff. And we
Dr. Underlie, we're coming up.
People.
I'm sorry, we're coming up against the wall. Can you stay with us through a real short break?
Absolutely.
Great. We're going to continue talking about education, and then we're going to talk about Dr. Underlie's dog. That's all on the way. Stay with us. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network. And welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. Jane Matinere in for Kristen Bry. Greg Bach is on the board. Kristen will be here tomorrow at 10:33. She joins us every Wednesday from 10:30 to 11 o'clock while she's on maternity leave and working from home. Right now, though, we're going to wrap up with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underlie is here. What are some good things we can look forward to in the new year, Dr. Underlie?
Oh, gosh, there's so many good things that we can look at. You know, when I think about it, we're focusing on diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, certainly so that all our schools and public libraries can have welcoming learning environments for every kid. When you think about it, at their core, kids need to feel safe. They need to be included. They need to feel that they're going to be that they belong so that they can be successful. And we're also starting to work on our next budget proposal. That's coming up fast to build on what we got last time, but also what we still need and what we still want so students can be successful, like free, healthy school meals for all. Investment in teacher recruitment and retention programs, increasing funding for mental health, and we want to increase the special education reimbursement rates. So I continue to be hopeful, certainly in our outlook, because our schools need our support and our students are hopeful, and supporting that hope is supporting their education. I'm also going to continue to push for better student achievement, and doing so through our advocacy and policy, like we have with literacy. Teachers are part of that too. So it's also how we demonstrate our advocacy through for teachers. We also, as I said earlier, we need strong teachers in all our schools.
Yes.
And strong professional development so that they can be the best teachers for our kids. And I'm also, like I said, with the budget stuff, going to really continue to push hard for mental health services in our schools. I mean, that's what we know that the kids need, and it's what the parents and the teachers want. And it makes sense to push in those programs into our schools because that's where the kids are.
I would just like to remind parents as well, remember how hard it was during COVID, during lockdown, when your kids couldn't go to school? Remember that the next time you see your child's teacher, and be kind, because I think that was eye-opening for a lot of people, Dr. Underlie, when they had to take over the responsibilities of an actual professional teacher. And I would have hoped and hope that the appreciation is there for what our educators do, because you do so much more than just teaching reading and writing. The amount of responsibilities we expect from our educators is pretty remarkable. Dave from the Shaw is on the line. Good morning, Dave. What did you want to say to Dr. Underlie?
Good morning. First off, I just want to thank Dr. Underlie for her advocacy, her work at the state level, because it definitely impacts things at a local level. Speaking as a parent of two kids in public schools and the spouse of a public school teacher, like, we need good leadership. But I think I wanted to just chime in and say, like, we have to have good leadership at a local level as well. As someone with boots on the ground here in Waukesha who feels like they're at kind of a ground zero of all that you were talking about, Dr. Underlie, of all the not so great things happening in education, I think part of that reason is because we've elected these extremist board members who've implemented some really poor policy. So people out there listening, you have to vote for strong public education. And that includes a vote for Dr. Underlie, but also local leaders as well.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Really appreciate it. Dave from the Shaw. Dr. Underlie, we only have a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, so thanks so much. Go ahead.
I want to ask about your assistant, Abigail, snitched on you and let us know that you have a dog and that you volunteer at an animal shelter, because we were talking about Haws Humane Animal Welfare Society here in Waukesha. So tell us about Dr. Underlie's dog.
So I was listening to that earlier, too, before I jumped on. And his name is Angus. He is a black Labrador retriever mix, and he is just sits outside my door. Like right now, he's just outside my door, like probably whining. I had to give him a bone, to like a rawhide, because he will just be pawing at the door. He is attached to my hip. Like, I'm scared sometimes for my life because he's behind me.
And you're going to trip?
I step backwards, like in the kitchen, I'm going to fall backwards. So he is very, very dependent. He is definitely my dog. I love him dearly. And my family, yes, we do volunteer at the Iowa County Humane Society. And we do that as a family, which I love. And we look forward to it. When you think about, you know, teachers, and you think about people who care about, you know, others and have this empathy, I mean, pets are included in that. So
how do you manage to stop your children from bringing home every animal that they work with at the animal shelter? Because that's got to be really, it's like, Mom, just this one. Come on,
yes,
Mom.
It's so hard. It is so hard. I definitely have to check my daughter's pockets in her hoodie before we leave. Make sure there's no kittens or anything stuffed in there. We just look forward to it. It's like our way to get our fix, right? You know, to, you know, have those pets. We have a lot of pets here on our farm, and it is tough, but that's how we deal with it. We go, and that's how we get our fix.
Well, and I wanted to share, we had a couple texts from earlier also that were talking about fostering dogs. So if you can't necessarily adopt an animal, and not everyone has that ability, but you can actually foster dogs. This texter said she's going to foster a dog for like 4 days over Christmas.
To get them
out of the shelter and get them a little bit acclimated. So that's a pretty cool thing if you can manage to do that too.
Some of these animals, these dogs especially, are in shelters for
way
a year
too long.
Or more. Yeah, way too long. And it's like, it's really sad that they grow up. A lot of these animals that we see, their owners have died. And just family members don't want to take them in. And it's just really working with them because they don't understand what's going on. They miss their owners. They don't know why they're there at the shelter. And they had a good life before, and now it's not so good. And so that's the hard part, when you know their backstory, and you really feel compassion for them. But,
Well, and you're teaching your children some very, very valuable lessons about compassion and kindness and caring, and good for you and good for them.
Thank you. Thank you. And if I could just really fast just to address the caller. I know we got a break, but thanks for bringing up those issues, Dave. School board membership and leadership matters when it comes to school achievement, but also the policies, because they can change those policies. And I'll be honest, those policies are not coming from local level. They're coming from national.
Absolutely. State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underlie, thank you so very much for your time. Really appreciate it. Stay close. News is coming up next. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.